I am joining the show. Amy Walter, former lead singer for the band Fighter, also had a solo album out, and we're going to catch up with her and see what else has been going on. Amy, thank you for joining the podcast.
Wow, it's great to be here, Joel.
Hey, I know we've been trying to work on this for quite a while, so I appreciate you taking the time to do this, and we have quite a few things to discuss. I like to kind of get to know the artist and the guest, and of course, it's a common question I hate to ask, but kind of going back, how did you get involved with music and performing, and who was influencing you?
Well, honestly, I grew up in a church that sang all a cappella. It was a Mennonite church, actually. And so I liked singing. My mom and dad sang, and it was just one of those things that the atmosphere I grew up in was a lot of music, a lot of singing around the piano. In a church that sings a cappella music, you learn early, you learn a part. Everybody doesn't just sing the melody, which kind of threw my husband Jim off, because when I took him there, he's like, oh, he doesn't sing well. Yikes. And then to, you know, if you're a guy and you're singing the melody, like, you know, you're a visitor. you're supposed to sing tenor or bass. So anyway, yeah. So that's where it started. I was in we formed a group in high school. And we were excited about our faith. My start in music was because we wanted to tell people about our faith in Christ. And so music was a vehicle for that, because I enjoyed music and I was, you know, excited about being a Christian and following Jesus. That's where it started. And that was the basis for every group I was in. Next, you know, went to college and formed a camp, was in a campus group, tried out and got into a campus group there. A small group that played contemporary Christian music, the early stuff.
Were you more influenced by Christian music at that time, or any kind of artist, or was there,
yes,
secular artist?
Well, yeah, you know, I grew up listening to Mom and Dad's records, Johnny Cash and gosh, I'm trying to think of some of the other stuff, but they played, you know, records are playing all the time. But yes, early Christian music was definitely there. I mean, through high school, you know, I listened to Carole King, Elton John, you know, those were the Cat Stevens. Those were my influence, just kind of a menage, a mix.
Just a variety of different artists there.
Yeah, of the pop stuff. And then I listened to early, as people like Larry Norman started coming out, and Love Song, Chuck Gerrard, and that stuff. I was super excited about that, because this was the first time people were really talking about their faith, and it wasn't hymns or, you know, church music. It
was something you could relate to a little bit.
Yeah,
more.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what I wanted. That's what excited me.
Were you kind of all in at that point when you figured that out and said, look, I want to make it. I want to be an artist. This is what I want to do. Or did that kind of come gradually later?
There was really no, I honestly can say I didn't really have dreams of making it. I just knew this is what I wanted to do. So I enjoyed singing. I enjoyed playing keyboards. So yeah, it was just something I had to do. And I started writing songs. I was influenced a lot by Michael Omardian, Michael and Stormy Omardian's records. And they were really kind of cutting edge when it came to lyrics that were about a Christian walk, but in a subtle way, in a more poetic way. So that they really influenced me a lot.
What was your first concert that you decided you wanted to go to? Wasn't like it was your choice, a band that you wanted to go see. Do you remember that?
Oh man. That's hard because I was raised in a small town in Iowa. There weren't that many
concerts. Not a whole lot going on.
Yeah. So I guess later when I moved to a different part of Iowa, and then that was more, I mean, Jim and I saw Queen on our honeymoon. That kind of dates me, but that was kind of an accident.
That would be my dream concert right there. Yeah. I've seen Queen, but it was with Paul Rogers because unfortunately Freddie Mercury's passed away. But Freddie Mercury.
Holy cow.
Man, that must have been awesome.
Yeah, it was great. So, I mean, there were Christian concerts that came to our churches, you know, Truth and things like that. But that was kind of, we were already rolling on. I was in groups that we were writing our own stuff then. So I really didn't go to that many concerts at the time. There weren't that many, but, and you're kind of, I'm struggling to remember.
Well, it's okay.
What my first one actually was, but yeah.
Well, and you mentioned that you played keyboard too. How well were you, or talented, or how, you know, were you good at keyboard, or were you like good enough to write songs, or
that's it, bingo. Right, actually, I could play pretty well. Once I stopped taking lessons, I got excited about playing and started like making up my own songs, and but so I could write well enough to write my own songs, but I was primarily keyboardist in the band in college that I was in. And then in college, I started to find my voice more. And so they gave me a couple of solos, and it's like, wow, I like this. But because otherwise I was just kind of a harmony singer, you know, with a group, kind of a gal. And then found my solo voice. So that was fun. And then eventually was in a group called Sapphire, which we put a record out about the time Sandy Patty, Wayne Watson were out. It was on a label, Zondervan label, called Singspiration.
What kind of style was that? Was that?
That was group? Kind of, that was pop Christian. Well,
was that a mix of female and male in the band, or was it an all female band, or
it was, three of us sang in that band.
Okay.
So we actually had to hire, Greg Nelson took us on, but we had to hire people, and we kind of paid for that recording, but it was a great recording. It was the name of the band was Sapphire, and the album was called Crystal Clear. Okay. So just to give you an idea of the era, this was 1980. They were mixing a Sweet Comfort Band record in the next room.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Studio. Where did you guys record that at?
Martin Sound in L.A.
Mm-hmm. How did you wind up going out to L.A.? Because you weren't living there, were you?
No. We. I'm not sure how we actually got. We sent our songs to it ended up in the hands of Greg Nelson. Then he hired some guys to actually record the record and said, okay, well, you know, this is how much it'll cost to come out, you know. So the vocals were ours, but all the instruments were pros.
So what happened after that album comes out?
We weren't actually on the label. They distributed it. And it was a little edgy, like our cover art was kind of like Fleetwood Mac-ish looking. And we were kind of edgy at the time, but it was nothing further. That was a one and done kind of project.
I gotcha.
We were doing our own stuff, but then we actually transitioned to doing some cover songs so that we could play in bars and clubs and hopefully spread the gospel there. Didn't work all that well. Was not a good call for us. I mean, not that we turned into, you know, crazy people or anything, but.
And you were just doing that as the band Sapphire?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And then, hey. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you about writing jingles too. Was that something you were doing during that time? And what jingles, who were you working for to do that kind of stuff?
I worked at a recording studio. It was called AB Sound Source. So the drummer of Sapphire and I started this recording studio. We went into it initially to write and produce jingles. Well, you can't really make a living at that. So he recorded all kinds of other advertising stuff for TV and radio. And so I was the jingle writer there. Okay. And so probably one of the biggest projects I did was for I did a Powerball jingle and I did a Iowa Lottery jingle. So there's a little
controversy
there, I guess. Like you're promoting gambling.
Yeah. I think people are probably more open to that now as opposed to probably back then.
Yeah. But lots of local stuff, but had some kind of medium regional things that were fun. And I still actually up until a few years ago, I've still had a couple agencies call me, I need a jingle again. Yeah. Jingles kind of went out, you know, I mean, more so now they're taking hit songs and kind of fitting them to the product. So
I'm like, have jingles always been this stupid and goofy? I mean, you'll see a Burger King commercial or something now, and you're like, anybody can write that.
I know.
It's like the dumber it is, the better. I don't get it. I'm like,
yeah.
Take some talent at this point to write something like this.
I know.
I was going to ask.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, when do you meet your husband, Jim? And how did that come together?
Yeah, so I was in the group Sapphire, and he was a Lutheran at the time, and actually he was into Transcendental Meditation shortly before that. And he came to our church to see his niece get dedicated. His brother went to our church, to the church I was going to. And really connected what the pastor was saying and just made a commitment to the Lord, because he never really heard the gospel preached like that in the Lutheran church. I mean, he learned a lot of scripture and things like that there, but it just, the whole Christian life, you know, it resonated with him. So we met there and I was like, dang, he's good looking. Lord, if I could just go out with him once. So oddly enough, he asked me out one time, like after church, and I was going somewhere with a friend of mine who was a guy. So it was like not really a date, but so I'm like, oh dang it. I'm already committed. So then nothing happened for a while, and then finally his brother set us up on a blind date after two other girls had couldn't go or something. It's like, well, hello. I thought I knew that. I thought his brother knew that I liked him, but anyway. Right. So that was the first date. He called me the next day. We went out, 6 months later. We saw each other pretty much every day. 6 months later, we were engaged. Wow. And then 6 months after that, we got married. But I was in the band at the time, Sapphire, and we needed a bass player. And he knew how to play guitar. So he thought, he goes, I'm going to borrow a bass and try out. So he did. And he was like, you know, he could hit the right notes. And like, we were not that musically savvy at the time. So we thought, oh, he sounds good. Yeah, you're in. So, we got to be in that band together and, just do the whole music thing together. So that was pretty cool.
How does the group Fighter come together?
We, after Sapphire broke up, I was in the working in the studio, and that I was working in the studio. Sapphire had kind of folded, and we met Sean Murphy. I can't remember. I think we met at church also. And we went out, we started talking about, we went to a Petra concert together. Okay. And we started talking, and he's like, wow, you know, we should start a band, three of us. And he said, we could both sing lead. He, you know, of course, he has an amazing voice. And we just started talking about it. We'd go out to lunch, talk about it, keep talking about what this group would look like and the kind of stuff we could do. And we started to get really excited about it. So that was about in 85 or 6. 86, we were officially started. We found a guitar player and a keyboard player. I believe we all went to the same, those guys went to the same church as well. So we started doing some Christian covers and some of our own stuff I had written and stuff Sean had written. And that was the start of Fighter.
You remember what cover songs you guys were doing? Like,
yeah, we did Pray in the USA by Morgan Cryer. We did a Leslie Phillips song, if you remember her. I don't know the name.
Wasn't into her.
Yeah, we did. We might have done. Do we do some? Possibly some Whiteheart. Mm-hmm. But not, I mean, most of them were our songs. But we had thrown some covers in there. Oh, Mylon LeFevre, I Will Rejoice. We did that one.
And you guys were, what city were you based out at that point? Were you still?
Waterloo, Iowa.
Okay.
Yep.
I've never heard of that city, so I don't know. You know, to find talent in what I deem as probably a smaller city, it's pretty amazing that can happen in a way, just how things work out.
Yeah. We eventually replaced that original guitar player and keyboard player with better players. Billy Heller was in Cedar Rapids and Mark Pence. They were both amazing players. So that was a really good move on our part. And we knew at that point, wow, this could be something. Now we knew we had something special that was going to be fun.
Was that tough sharing lead vocals with Sean and deciding, okay, who's going to sing this? How do you guys come up with that decision? Or just,
A lot of times it was who wrote it. Later, like by the second record, we were experimenting more with the song Try on Bang the Drum was a music that Sean and Bill wrote, and they gave it to me. I came up with the melody and lyrics. So I wish we had tried that a little sooner, because I was used to writing with keyboards, which was not great when you're doing rock. You tend to fall into a certain, mm-hmm. you know, way of writing. And so that was really magical, actually, how that kind of combination worked. It was good to stretch me.
So when you guys were performing, because I've never seen you guys live, but you weren't doing anything. Were you just singing your parts when you're on stage? I mean, what do you do? How do you decide what to do? I don't know if that makes sense, because if you're just singing and then you don't have nothing to do, you're like, well, I don't want to just stand here awkwardly. What do I do now?
That's funny, because that's what I work with bands all the time that happens. And
yeah.
So when Sean's singing lead, you know, you draw the attention to him, first of all, kind of visually, and then usually, or you're interacting with the other band members while he's singing. But usually on our choruses, we had a lot of harmonies. So popping in for those harmonies, back to the mic for that. Sometimes I played a little tambourine, but
right.
a few songs, but not, you know, but it's all about, not drawing attention to yourself, but drawing attention to who's, you know, who's singing And so that the audience is focusing on Sean, so I don't really have to do much, but just not be a bump on a log.
You're right. I mean, that has to be tough. Yeah. I mean, because you have to go, what do I do? Without looking like, yeah, I won't look like a weirdo up here. I don't know what to do. Especially when how do you, was it Word Records that you guys got signed to? Or
we,
was that
we were the first actually, label? The label was Wonderland.
Okay.
But Word picked us up through their Word Associated Labels, WAL. Mm-hmm. So we had the freedom to record. Our producer, Caesar Kalinowski, produced it. And it came under that label for distribution. So we weren't like a word artist, okay. But yeah.
When you guys first signed with that, or was there any kind of record or not a record contract, but any kind of deal where you said, okay, we have 3 albums we have to make or something like that?
He put us, I think we had 2 with him, and then Caesar had first rights to do any solo project after that. So I took advantage of that. After Fighter broke up, I did a record on the same label, a solo record.
Well, and you mentioned working with Caesar. How did you guys, was Caesar part of that? What part of Word or part of the Wonderland or how did you guys hook up with him to produce?
He was part of Wonderland was his label along with a couple other guys, Gavin Morkel and Dave Bunker at the beginning. So it was interesting. He found us through a Battle of the Bands and noticed us. Actually, there was two. Yeah, it was a Battle of the Bands, and then we got the prize for that was getting to play at Cornerstone. Wait, or was that a separate thing? We played at Cornerstone, ran into him again.
What year did you play Cornerstone? You remember?
That was 88.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So Caesar liked us, and you know, he thought, I'd like to work with you guys, so we made the deal and.
I know he's produced some good albums. I'm going blank on the other stuff he's done because I know I've talked about it with other artists, but how'd you like working with him as a producer?
That's an interesting question. he was not bad. He wasn't he didn't have the musical savvy and know-how of that, you know, an ideal producer would have. I mean, he had some good instincts, but Bang the Drum, I mean, some of it sounded a little more basic. I mean, there was a lot more we could have done, but he insisted on producing it actually. For the second record, we got approached by the Elefantes, John and Dino.
Yeah.
Elefante said, wow, I'd love to produce you guys. And we tried to lobby for that because, you know, Word didn't care. We just needed to, you know, turn in a good project for them. But Caesar insisted on doing that record. So, and Bang the Drum's good. It's a good record.
It is. I wonder how that would have worked out had John and Dino done that. I mean, all the stuff they were putting out back in the day.
Yeah, I know.
And from what I've been told from artists, I should say John was pretty, and I won't say tough, maybe tough is the word, but with lead vocalist, he really pushed the lead vocalist when he recorded with him all the stories I've heard.
Yeah, I would have welcomed that because I kind of felt like I had to push myself, which I did. I mean, but somebody with the right know-how in terms of producing vocals probably could have got a lot more out of me.
Well, how did you like the first album or the outcome of the first album? And what was the feedback from people, or do you guys even go play shows, or, cause I know going to tour at any point is not easy if you get to it all, it's costly, but what happens with you guys and the reaction?
After yeah. That first I album? Mean, we got a great reaction with us. We were already doing these songs live. Whenever we wrote a song, we'd go out, we'd work it up for live, go perform it for, you know, so we had all these songs we'd already been performing. And then coming out with the record was awesome. Then people had it in their hands. Same way with Bang the Drum. Actually, we were writing new stuff and would had been performing it. It wasn't like we were big time that you had to, you know, now it's all about you write the songs, go in the studio and then perform it. So we had a chance to kind of hone the songs before we went in the studio, which is good. Which I think it's great because sometimes you know, the raw song at the beginning kind of has a chance to evolve a little bit from where you think, wow, this is better because we've worked out the bugs to it. So that's different in that respect. We were never touring full time. We did some tours, like we opened for White Cross. That was an actual tour. A lot of times we opened for people like Jeff Moore and Mylon Lefevre and Petra and Mark Farner from Grand Funk. We had a chance to open for people, which was a big thrill. So we were mostly weekends and an occasional block of tour dates.
What's going on in your life when that's not going on? I mean, I guess most people don't think, hey, these people have to have real jobs or whatever it might be.
Yeah, we were all working. Actually, I was the only one not. I was booking, trying to book the band. We were kind of self-contained. So I was doing that and then kind of doing freelance, like writing jingles and songwriting stuff. But that was my job for a while, was trying to get us dates. And then everybody else had flexible enough jobs that if shows came up during the week, we could take them. They just needed to, you know, give their notice about taking time off. So that worked out really well, actually.
Okay. And yeah. I was going to ask you a question. I'm kind of finding out a lot of people don't play on the albums that we thought they did. Was this all the members playing on the albums, or were there studio musicians brought in any points?
Nope. It was all us. I'm trying to That's think good. If we added anybody. I don't think we did, actually. It was just the five.
Well, I found out that John and Dino did that a lot. People you thought may not play it on albums, like Guardian. You know, they brought in Jamie Wallum. I know Jamie, he plays drums. I've had him on the show, but he played on the first Guardian album or two. And then he played on with The Brave and Michael Sweet. But yeah, a lot of people you thought that member played, you're like, gonna find out. He didn't, like Michael Feehan from White Cross didn't play on any of the early the White Cross stuff.
Yeah.
Like he told me that on the show. I was kind of shocked. And I know John and Dina were pretty big on doing that. So
yeah,
maybe that could have been a good thing that, you know, the guys, for the band members at least, who knows That's how true. Things could have gone.
Yeah. Jim always felt like he was the weakest in terms of musicality, but once he learned the song, he was tight on it.
Yeah.
Maybe not as good as freelancing or, you know, riffing or, but he turned out to be a solid player. So you're right. It's probably a nice thing to be able to say, okay, we did everything on the record. We wrote all the songs, we played all the instruments. So, yeah.
When you guys go into that second album and getting ready for that and recording?
When, let's see. So The Waiting came out in 91.
91, yeah.
And then Bang the Drum came out in 93. So like I said, right after recording The Waiting, we were, you know, we were already writing and performing some of the new stuff live, and over time had enough tunes to do the second record. So yeah, it was 2 years apart.
And do you prefer either one of those albums over the other? Is there more of a favorite album to you, or how do you feel about those two albums?
Well, the first one is more on the sentimental side of, like, some of the first songs that we demoed, we re-recorded for The Waiting. So they're more, I guess, like I said, sentimental, that, mm-hmm. you know, the, some of the first things. And we got, I believe, Star One was on The Waiting, wasn't it? That was one of our singles that was on CCM radio. Then Bang the Drum, I think, has a lot, you know, better songs musically. It was a little heart, a little edgier then. Heller's guitar playing, just, we still listen to some of those leads now, just like start laughing, because how do you play that freaking fast? It's just like, yeah. Just crazy, but melodic. You know, a lot of guitar players maybe are fast, but they're not melodic. They don't have the taste. They don't know when to hold back and when to let it fly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is it soon after that the band splits up, or what happens to make the band split up, or do you guys technically split up, or?
Yeah. So that was a weird time. So everybody liked Bang the Drum, and then we were getting a lot more attention and things were kind of buzzing about us. We started talking about, okay, so what's the future look like? Okay, now we need to hire. We had a manager earlier on, Dave Bunker, but at the time we were at the point where there wasn't anything to manage. And so we were kind of flying for a while without a manager, without management. And it was the time where we really need something to get in place, because now is the time, you know, bigger tours could happen and different things like that. So we started talking about musical direction and live direction. So Sean had always played drums. He played standing up on an electronic kit.
Okay.
Because he sang lead, we put him up front to, like, as you're looking at the stage, the right side of the stage. I was in the center, and then Heller, then keys and bass in the back. So because he was singing so much lead, it was made sense for him to. So he learned how to play standing up, and which is easier with an electronic kit. Obviously, I don't think you could do that with an acoustic kit. So he and Mark thought, okay, they were kind of in agreement. Like, yeah, we should have Sean come out and be a front man too, which was a little awkward. Because, you know, get another drummer and have him come out. And I don't know, Billy and Jim and I it wasn't because I was threatened. It just didn't seem like it would make sense.
Now you got two people on the stage trying to figure out what to do. When yeah.
Exactly. So it was that in some, you know, direction. They were, you know, I don't think they wanted to hire a manager at that point, or I don't know. It was just, that was part of it. And then part of it was a couple of life changes for Mark and Billy. They'd gotten married, and then kids were coming along. So that was changing the dynamics there. And but because of the difference in the musical direction and the business direction of the band, we lost Heller, and of course his, you know, he had had a baby, or second baby on the way or something. So that was tough. We lost Billy, but then we got someone to fill in from LA that We stuck him. We had him get on a bus, a Greyhound bus. Believe it or not, and I can't believe we made him do that, but we were too cheap. So he came out and did some shows with us, and he was great. He was one of those fast guitar players, like straight out of GIT out there, but he wasn't as tasty as Heller. Just didn't he didn't have a good sense of the melodic solos, but he fit. He did Brazil. We went to Brazil with us. We had that huge show that was one of our last shows. 110,000 people.
There's always such huge crowds down there for.
Oh, I know.
Like you guys.
It's yeah, awesome. Bride went with us on that. Bride were the big American bands, I guess, that they thought were so big over here, but we weren't really. We weren't even as big as Bride, and I think we were the headliner at the end of the show.
Oh, really? Wow. Did you guys have issues with the label or distribution? Was there any kind of tough, I don't know, feelings or things going on with? You hear those horror stories about, you know, labels and how unfair they are and things like that. Did you guys ever deal with that kind of stuff?
Well, nothing really. Not until it was more with, we had disagreements with Caesar, our producer, because he was actually the label Wonderland, and that Wonderland fell under Word. So it wasn't necessarily with Word, but after the two Fighter records and then my solo record, we went to Word and asked, you know, what are you promoting this, my solo record, or what, you know, what's going on? And our radio guy, Tony Shore, said, they're not putting any money into marketing because the Word Associated label was going to fold. So we talked him into giving us all the CDs they had set aside for promotion, and we sent them out ourselves to some radio stations and stuff. But that was kind of sad. It was kind of like, wow, it just came out and they're not going to do anything.
Was that for your solo album, you said?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And that's Hit Me in the Heart. Is that the name of it?
Yes. Correct? Yeah. Okay. They did do an ad in CCM magazine, a nice ad for it, but that was about it.
So there wasn't much going on when that album comes out then.
Right. And that's when we decided to move to Nashville, Jim and I, because it's like, well, if we're going to do anything in music, let's just get down there and figure it out. Cause staying in Iowa was not really the answer for a music career, really. I mean, not that you can't have one, but everything is centered in Nashville for Christian music for sure. Yeah.
But about what year did you guys move there?
That was the very end of 95.
Well, did you also feel the effect of music changing with obviously the Nirvana whole thing and grunge and alternative coming in and
so
everything
get
else is out the window?
So we loved Giant, Dan Huff, David Huff. We would A/B our record mixes to theirs, I think for both albums, because they had such a huge sound. It's awesome. So when we got to Nashville, or when we visited Nashville, for some reason I was in David Huff's studio. I can't remember what that was about, but I was looking at the Giant record on the wall, you know, framed, and it's like, man, you guys were good. It's just like, I can't remember if I said what happened. I mean, I knew what had happened. David just says, yeah, well, was it Nirvana? What was the other grunge band that was big at the time?
Pearl Jam.
Yeah. Then Pearl Jam came out, and that was the end of arena rock. Right? It's like the nail in the coffin. So it was sad because, you know, when music changes like that, if you don't change, and I don't know as if had Fighter stayed together, if we would have been willing to shift.
Yeah.
To actually I mean, then it's kind of disingenuous.
Well, exactly. Yeah. That, like you just said, because then you do have those bands like Warrants or whoever it might be, and they're trying to change their style, and you're like, that's not why I love this band. Mm-hmm. It's, I don't want you guys doing alternative or grunge. You guys have your good song, or, you know, whatever it might be. I mean, that's with any band, but a lot of those bands did try to do that, and it didn't sound as good.
Yeah.
I know it was a tough decision back then, and I don't know if you've noticed, and I'm not trying to jump ahead too much, and I don't want to keep you too much longer, but the resurgence of this kind of music that's been going on the past couple of years or so, because if I'm not mistaken, your stuff was put back out again.
Yes. Girder Records contacted us and said, you know, we'd love to re-release your stuff because it's been out of print. So actually that agreement was through Caesar, our producer.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, who had the rights to the.
Yeah. So he did a good job on remastering, which was nice. But yeah, it's nice to have it, you know, available again, because so back then we didn't have internet. I mean, good grief, just internet at all, really. So let alone social media. Yeah. So now we set up a fighter page years ago, and people started chiming in. It's like, oh, your music changed my life, and just love you guys. You're my favorite band, blah, blah, blah. It's crazy to see all this affirmation, and it's very gratifying to know what you did and what you spent your years doing really affected people's lives and made a difference. So that's been the cool part about social media now, is just hearing from people like that.
Well, and I was going to ask you, after you guys moved to Nashville, are you still involved in music? I know you guys work to a degree, but because I know you start to get involved with other roles of music too.
Yeah. So I was doing some co-writing with people. I was trying to get some session work, different things like that. None of it really popped big until I was introduced to Tom Jackson. So what Tom does, and what he'd been doing since the 80s sometime, is working with people on their live show. He was in a band that really learned how to entertain an audience, engage, and he started studying what makes people connect with a band or an artist, or what makes them people just kind of check out. So over the years, he would study this, and he came up with this, what he now calls a live music method, where he and I work with artists on their live performance. What are they doing on stage? What's the right, first of all, the right arrangement of the song for a live audience, a live show? You're not restricted to the album version. It's like we're extracting what we call moments in the songs, and because that's what audiences connect to, are these moments that happen. It's just a fun moment. Is it like an intimate moment where they're like, brings them to tears? Is it jump up and down, sing along kind of a thing? So we help them create moments. We help them with what's going on visually, because most of what the audience gets from an artist communication wise is visual, what they see. And it's a lot of little things that go into, you know, how to create the right kind of set list, set flow, what to say to an audience that's intelligent. And so when I met Tom and started hearing what he was doing, it's like, wow, this makes total sense. Actually, Fighter had his first cassette series. We never really paid that much attention to it. I listened to it and, you know, fine. But until you actually see the difference it makes, I just thought, wow, this is amazing. And it makes total sense as being coming from the artist side. So I was actually introduced by Fighter's old manager to Tom, and then over time finally got connected, and he he saw that I could actually do this and needed to hire someone else. So yeah, that was probably 15 years ago.
Who are some of the acts that people might know that you've worked with?
Well, of course, he's worked with people like Taylor Swift and Shawn Mendes and Magic.
I'm not familiar. Taylor Swift. Yeah, right.
Thompson Square, I worked with him on a little bit. The band Perry. Mm-hmm. But a lot of my artists were in the, like, we've both worked with Sidewalk Prophets in the Christian arena. Most recently worked with Ann Wilson. He's got the big song.
Not for Parks, but the newer Ann Wilson.
Yeah. Ann was an E on the end. Yeah. I'm trying to think else, who else you would have heard. A lot of them are up and coming. And there's new artist Dylan Carmichael in the country world. Gosh, I don't know. It's exciting for me to actually work with people that is like have something happening and it's just they're just getting rolling and just to see the jump they take.
I don't want to say it's hypothetical, but if you said, okay, this is the perfect band that's putting on the perfect concert and everything is just almost, yeah, I mean it's not going perfect, but whether it be from any time period, I mean, or now, who would you say that is the band right there? They got it going on. They know what they're doing. Or artists.
Well, typically it's going to be more about single players. I mean, Freddie Mercury was awesome, but the rest of Queen, they weren't. Didn't have as much going on as Freddie did.
So, well, all the charisma was going, it was him.
Right. So it was about him. Band-wise, so same thing with Heart. Nancy Wilson was awesome at entertaining and engaging. She was fun to watch. Now, Shania Twain, when she came out, her whole band was part of the show. And it was amazing. And no one in country music had really done a show like that before. It's usually the band stands in back and the lead, whoever the name was, is up front. But she got her whole band involved and that made it fun and engaging. And I'm about to go to a Winter Jam on Friday because I've worked with couple of the artists there. Apparently, Tom worked with We the Kingdom.
Yeah.
Who is now very big. They've taken it to, they've worked on the live show after working with Tom. And Tom said he feels like it's, the best live show out there right now. So I'm excited to see that. And I've seen clips of him. It just looks super high energy, kind of like for King and Country's.
Yeah, I've seen some of their clips too. Yeah. That's what you made me think of when you said them. I was thinking of that band too.
Yep. So yeah, it'll be fun to see him. I've worked with the band that's starting the show called Renee. They're a sister duo, so got to get there early.
Right. Well, and how do artists hook up with you guys or even come to you? I mean, obviously, finances is a thing, but are you guys picky about, will you just take anybody? I mean, how does it work?
Yeah, I mean, this works with artists at any level, professional on down to beginner. So the website is onstagesuccess.com. Okay. A lot of our contacts come through either Tom or I speaking somewhere. Tom's spoken really all over the world, but he's got a really great book out and a bunch of videos, a couple of video series. So a lot of times people have either seen him speak or have run across our blogs or have Google. I mean, there's really what we're doing is unlike really any other kind of. I mean, there are people that call themselves performance coaches, which they're not doing. They're not digging to the right song arrangement for live. I mean, we'll change a song, well, extend endings or change the intro, or, you know, play with the bridge and make it more dramatic and for live, because it's just calls for it. So the fact that we work with the music too is why we call ourselves live music producers and not just performance coaches.
Well, is it difficult to do something different with each artist? Because you may have this great formula, you're like, this is gonna be awesome, but not every artist is the same and everything's gotta be right. Different. Does that become difficult for you to say, we gotta be unique every time? We cannot stay to just this formula right here.
Yeah. So the principles work for any artist, but how we apply them differs. Just like a producer in the studio would produce a song. Even Tom and I would produce an artist differently, just gauging from our experiences and backgrounds and stuff. We take who the artist is into consideration, first of all. Is this kind of more of a straight ahead kind of Chris Stapleton or Bruce Springsteen, or is this going to be pop artist that really needs a lot of movement? We don't teach like dance choreography or anything. We mostly work on, when it comes to movement, the movement part, we're working on more organic, natural kind of movement and interaction with each other. But yeah, so each artist plus each song, the song kind of tells us what the moment will turn out to be.
Okay.
You know, the song plus their personality. It's like we may try some of the same things with different artists, but it comes across differently, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of curious. I don't know if you want to say a name or anything, but is there any artists you're like, wow, they're awesome, but they are boring to watch?
Oh, man. I don't know if I should name names. Well,
in trouble.
I mean, there are some big time artists that people will go to just because they've heard their songs on the radio. Mm-hmm. But then they get there. So if you go to an Eagles concert, nothing's happening, but the harmonies are freaking awesome. You know, yeah. They're all like
the music huge. Makes it worth it.
Yes. Yeah.
The talent.
So yeah. So, and then I'm surprised there are a lot of big names that just don't do anything or don't want in. George Strait just stands there. Trying to think of, there are people that do some annoying things like flick their fingers on the mic or I don't know. There's some people that have more of a connection, even in the way they look at you, look at someone in the audience.
Well, now that you've been doing this job, you probably pay a lot more attention to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I remember super critical. I am too. As a drummer, or as, you know, all my life, I've been, you know, always, you know, I watch the drummer. And yeah. It is tough because I was always more energetic, even though about third song, I'm like, whew, why am I just, I'm about to die back here. But, but it's, I hate watching a drummer that looks like a mannequin back there. No emotions.
Right.
No movements. And it's just barely hitting the drums or whatever it might be. That's why Robert Sweet from Striper is my favorite drummer. He's just very passionate, very energetic. Mm-hmm. And a great player, but it's tough to watch those kind of artists. You're like, oh, I'm gonna be like, get out of that seat. I'm coming up there. I'm taking.
Yeah, exactly.
You're boring me.
Do something. Yeah, I didn't pay to see you bore me, or you know, do something. Take a chance. You know, push the envelope. Give me my money's worth.
So. Anything else in music that you've been involved in, or is there a chance that you would record again? Or I know not all the members of Fighter are still with us. Was it Mark? Is that who passed away?
Mark and also Sean a year ago.
Oh, wow. And I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, he had he passed away from COVID.
I did not know that.
Yeah. That was a tough one. They were both tough.
I would say, well, I guess a chance of fighter getting back together, because Sean being such a huge part of it would probably
not be
ideal. But, you know, is there a chance of you doing anything, or you and your husband, or maybe you guys?
I don't know. I mean, we had talked about it up until Sean passed, and then we haven't really. But I guess there's enough songs, fighter songs that I sang, that if we wanted to, we could do some sort of show. But if anyone would come.
Yeah.
Well, it would be fun.
It'd be nice. I mean, if you guys could, or you could do another recording, you know, especially right now with the resurgence, like I kind of mentioned, people are getting back into all this stuff and hungry for stuff. And a lot of these artists are putting out new music again, and it's pretty exciting. Do you miss doing that?
Every once in a while, but I thought I would really miss it. I wasn't sure I would be able to do what I'm doing now and not be heartbroken. But once I started working with other artists and helping them develop and just come alive, it was so gratifying that it's almost as good as, you know, being on stage myself, just kind of passing on that, what I learned being in a band, plus what Tom's teaching. And it's been great. Yeah, I've been really grateful to have this a job I never knew I always wanted.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's a very unique job for sure. Not really anybody's doing that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there anything outside of music that you enjoy doing? Any other kind of hobbies, or people might be surprised that you might be into?
I like writing. I've been blogging a lot. Well, blogging for the website, but just kind of working on writing some things. So I've always enjoyed that. I just put the songwriting on a shelf when I started with Tom Jackson. And that was good for me to put everything else aside so I could focus on one thing and really develop it. So I think that was a good call for me. So, I mean, Jim and I enjoyed traveling and vacationing, and musically, not. I mean, we haven't, again, talked about convening or writing any new fighter music. So that may be at an end, but who knows?
Yeah. And if people want to get in contact with you, I know you mentioned the website a minute ago, for any reason. So, you know, what would be best? Where can people reach you?
Your services? Fighter the Band. If you're interested in maybe seeing some posts, occasional posts on Fighter, it's under Fighter the Band. My Instagram is Amy Takes a Picture.
Okay.
So you can follow me there, or I'm on Facebook as well, Amy Walter. The website is onstagesuccess.com if it's an artist wanting to work on their live performance. I can't tell you how much of a difference it makes. We've never seen it not work if an artist will apply it. So that's what excites me about it, is it works in a big way.
Well, do you guys work with just, if you're working with someone that's not based out of Nashville, do you like online, or how does that work?
Yeah.
We'll
travel where you are. Or online is okay. We do online stuff, and
not as good though as in person.
It's okay if we've worked with you in person first. That's ultimately, that way there's a lot of basics, you know, that are easier to cover in person. But yes, Tom and I both do a lot of online things. The easiest thing to do online is to send a video of you performing live, and then we can go over it and critique it and show you things you could try and changes to make, things like that.
Like, don't scratch your butt on this part. Don't pick your nose on that part.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, try an extended solo here. You guys need to interact on this, and it's a lot of little things to get an audience's attention. So it's the minutia that adds up to a really great performance. But yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, Amy, I appreciate you joining the show, and I always like to leave my or let my guests have the last word. If there's anything you want to say to fans of the music of Fighter or your solo material, or anything you just want to say to people listening, I'll let you have the last word.
Well, I just want to thank anybody that's been a Fighter follower. It's meant a lot to us in recent years to hear how much our music has meant to people. And it just kind of blows us away to hear from people from years ago still talking about how they, you know, wore our cassette out, or, you know, lost the CD and now they, you know, they want to find a new one. And how much their lives have been, in some cases, changed by our music. So just that I'm really grateful for that experience, and the fact that it's touched people's hearts all these years is the ultimate gift.